From the great halls of their house, there are assembled three who hope to one day be the world's greatest driving heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe comes our team captain, the Vision, Bill Fisher. Their soon-to-be Wonder Woman, Vicky Fisher. Our Captain Marvel and head flight trainee, Jennifer Scripchuk. And our Batman, the master of tools, gadgets, and all things mechanical, our mild-mannered soon-to-be billionaire, Alan Danvers. Their mission, to fight injustice, share what is right and wrong, to get you out of your house and come out racing with them, and serve all mankind. They are the Garage Heroes in Training Team.
Welcome to the Garage Heroes in Training Podcast. I'm the only host for this episode. Sorry, everybody. My name is Bill. I would say who else is hosting, but it's just me. We have a guest for this episode. He is the host of the Race FF Pod. And I do not think, like us, he's into superheroes. So he's not talking about the Fantastic Four. We'll get into that later. He is an instructor, and he's relatively early in his Honda Challenge career. And yeah. I think you should add his podcast to your rotation, and just don't drop ours, but that's okay. We have Jaime Garcia. Welcome to the podcast.
Bill, thank you. Those are some really kind words. And again, sharing your platform with me, I think that's one of the biggest compliments you could receive from a fellow podcaster. I mean, and, you know, we've had kind of mutual guests.
Yep.
On both of our podcasts. Mine's obviously geared towards front wheel drive, i.e. wrong wheel drive, is focusing more on the SoCal tracks and SoCal builders. But yeah, you know, it's my podcast is a little bit more about like a build journal of the car, which I am currently
literally sitting in right now. So
yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I think we approach it from a couple different perspectives, and you know, the way that people learn, sometimes they need to hear things from a different perspective. So, you know, I think, you know, just because you drive a car apparently in the wrong direction, because it should be going the other way, you know, if you drove it backwards, we'd agree on things. however, we're building a car that's just like yours. I think it might even be the same. We've got a 93 Civic in the midst right now.
Nice. Okay, so I was listening to your most recent podcast.
I'm sorry.
And you guys kept, again, I enjoy it. And you guys kept on mentioning the Civic, and I was like, damn, I wish I had been listening more often, because then I would know what Civic you were talking about.
We don't even keep track of our cars. Don't worry. It's fine.
Yeah, I remember hearing you talking about like, ooh, is it time to buy another car?
Yeah. You know, if I have to, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Got to keep the CFO happy.
There you go. but yeah, I drive a 93 Civic Si, and it is a Si. It's a very rare kind of trim. You don't find those as much. And of course, I am gutting the crap out of it, putting the cage, and going to be racing it in wheel-to-wheel racing. So of course, I'm ruining what will probably be a bring a trailer, what would have been a bring a trailer, like $10,000 to $15,000 option, now that I've seen some of the prices going up for these cars. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, let's think positively. Once you establish your racing pedigree with this car, it'll be worth twice as much as that, because they'll want the one that Garcia won this event in. So, you know, we'll go with that. That sounds like a much better plan.
What year you have a 93 Civic? Is it a four-door hatchback?
It's a two-door, well, three-door, I guess, hatchback. DX, I believe, is the model. So,
okay.
Right now it is bright yellow.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So what engine does it have in it?
D16, I think.
Oh,
no, 18. I don't know. It's written right on it. I just have to go look at it again.
Oh, well, it probably is. It's not the engine that came with the car, right?
No, I don't know. I do not believe so.
Okay, so it's probably, if it was swapped out, most people swap out for the B18 that came on the Integras. So it's a dual overhead cam engine versus the single overhead cams.
I think this one's single. I'm looking to see if I can get up the
If it's a single, most likely, and it's a 1.6 liter, it's most likely the D16C6, which is the same thing that's in my car.
That does sound right.
And it's a good engine. It's got a good flowing head. The only sad thing about these cars is the real weak point is going to be the transmissions. Because Honda doesn't make any new parts for it. You do have other aftermarket manufacturers making components for it, but you know, you're not getting the same R&D that Honda has put out. And I mean, it's kind of unfair to compare a smaller company to the might of the research and development that millions and millions of dollars have gone into via Honda to a smaller company. So obviously they're going to produce different results.
Well, we do have 2.5 spare engines and 2 spare transmissions. So we're in decent shape right now.
Yeah, you're good. And I mean, those cars are essentially Acura Integras. Everything from the Integra bolts onto that car. So you're in good hands. Yep, there's plenty of those in the junkyard if you need anything.
We are in the midst of upgrading the brake package right now. So we'll get there. It should be fun.
Nice.
It's going to be fun. Nice. I don't know that it'll be as fast as yours because, you know, we'll be driving it, but, you know.
you'd be surprised. I'm looking at my competition in SoCal, and we have a very competitive group. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm going to be lucky if I get anywhere close to the podium. It's going to require a lot of DNFs from the faster guys.
No, I mean, you got to get there some way. I mean,
yeah. But happens. I mean,
that's not the fun way, though.
Yeah, this has been a long a dream that I've had since I first went out to the racetrack and saw like Honda's road racing, and I've wanted to do wheel to wheel, and now I'm at a point in my life where I can afford to do that. Sure. So
how did you get the bug and get involved?
You know, that's a really interesting question because no one in my family or in my immediate group of friends really did anything with cars outside of just like services for them in terms of like just auto detail. And that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. In terms of driving and motorsports, I had no exposure until I had a good friend of mine and who became my mentor, John Lindemann, and he was the one that started pushing me to do NASA events like you guys have. Mm-hmm. And with his exposure and training me how to actually like heel toe and rev match and whatnot, I little by little, when I was in college, started going to like some NASA events. And then after I graduated college and started working, I eventually got to the point where I could do more and more events, and now this is where I am. I'm making horrible financial decisions.
But they're fun.
They are fun, and it's I mean, like, even though like you and I have different theories on vehicle layout, like I find that no matter what layout, what vehicle you're using, the people that you're out on track with, you share the most in common because you're willing to do this hyper niche thing. Mm-hmm. And even if I had like 5 or 6 people that were into Hondas and doing Honda stuff, if they didn't track, I would still gravitate to a guy in a Corvette that tracks.
Right.
Because, you know, like, the people that you meet doing road racing events, they're just good people for the majority. The bad ones don't last.
Absolutely. Well, we only make fun of you for your front wheel drive proclivities because we just make fun of people because it's funny. We actually have all types of cars in our team, so we want to be as well rounded as we can. So, you know, we don't think anybody should just drive. You know, if you drive a Porsche, don't just drive a rear-wheel drive rear-engine car. Just try the other stuff and you'll be a better driver. So
I remember you guys were talking about like that turbo Miata, and I'm blanking on the names. I'm always bad with names, so I apologize to your co-host. And you were talking about, like, and it seemed like to me, the way she was talking about having, like, that stuck feeling where mm-hmm. she felt like kind of like the Miata is a great car and the turbo setup that she has would be really fun. But it seems like she needs something that she's going to be able to go out there and just do laps in.
Yep.
And just kind of like get comfortable with being uncomfortable in a vehicle.
For sure.
And having a turbo is definitely not conducive to going out there and doing a lot of laps.
No, no. Well, if you do, it gets really, really hot. So,
yeah, the heat management is a big thing. Although yeah. Adam Jabe seems to have the, he has the secret sauce for turbo front wheel drives.
He's got a lot of secret sauces though. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Adam's an awesome person.
He is. He is. Mm-hmm. So you started racing. Well, you started HPDing, and then you started going down your instructing a bit, and then you started mm-hmm. going down your wheel-to-wheel path. You want to go a little bit about that history and how you progressed?
Yeah, I was asked by one of our main, one of the instructors who's in charge of our HPD3. So for those that aren't aware, HPD3 is kind of like I would consider them every other organization, kind of like your intermediate to advanced drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of people who are just graduating from HPD2, which is, you know, somebody who's allowed to kind of drive on the track by themselves. And you have a lot of people who are just ready to enter time trials.
Right.
So the gap in performance and speed, I think in HPD3 has the highest delta. And sure. that instructor came up to me and said, like, you know what, we need some instructors. And I've known you, you have the attitude, you have kind of what we're looking for. Would you consider to instruct? And I don't know, I've always had kind of like a Dunning-Kruger effect where I never consider myself. I always like have that fear that I'm going to get found out for being a fraud. And just like, kind of like not knowing what I'm doing. And when I was asked to help teach, I'm like, I don't know if I can do that, but I'll try my best. And, mm-hmm. you know, once I started meeting the HPD1 drivers, I'm like, oh, I'll just help these people like the way I wish I would have gotten guidance and when I first started out and try and help them stay away from the pitfalls that I went through at times where, mm-hmm. you know, you need to spend more money on tires and brakes and not so much on lip kits and whatnot.
No.
So
put the turbo away.
Put the turbo away. Yes. Reliability. Laps will help you. And I think with that Dunning-Kruger effect of mine, I went in to take the motorsports licensing because I was like, you know what? I was doing time trials at the time and I felt like I need to kind of just have somebody else outside of me say that I'm decent enough to like race and decent enough to go out there and compete. Not mm-hmm. necessarily like an ego thing, but just to reaffirm sure. that I'm not blowing smoke up my own butt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after I went through the course and passed, I was told, oh, I just got a bird that hit my window. Okay, interesting. I ended up passing the course and hearing from other Honda Challenge drivers who I've talked to saying like, all right, man, you're ready to go. Like, get the car and come out here and race with us. So up until now, I've just been trying to get the car and go out there and race with them.
That's a project unto itself, which we are going to talk about soon. So driving wise, any mm-hmm. goals, dreams, bucket list items left on your list?
I mean, for me, dreams, I mean, so I started in college learning Japanese because I just really enjoyed working on Hondas and Japanese cars because they were really easy to put back. And I always wondered what the funny letters were in the little parts and whatnot. And I ended up studying abroad in Japan. So a dream for me is to go to one of the racetracks and actually drive it like Tsukuba, Suzuka, or Fuji Speedway. I did actually get a chance with a couple of friends of mine to go over to a time attack at Tsukuba right before COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So that was like a dream come true to see, you know, all the JDM cars. And
there's a two-part episode of your podcast that people can listen to for that one. Not that I listened, but you know.
Yeah, it was definitely one of our buddies. He's definitely the more aggressive and more of like, hey, get your crap together. We're gonna go out here and we're gonna do this, and kind of put the fire on my butt to actually like commit to a date. And we ended up going, and we traveled around all of southern Japan in a van and sleeping down by the river.
Yep.
If you get that reference.
I do. So why front wheel drive? Is it when you were growing up? Is it, you know?
So that's kind of weird because that is a real good question. Most of my friends, when I first started getting into cars, were all drifters.
Mm-hmm.
And they all drove RX-7s.
Mm-hmm.
So like the complete opposite of a reliable front wheel drive, you have an unreliable rear wheel drive turbo car.
Yeah.
So
it's almost the same.
No, it was the car that I had. And then, you know, once I started getting involved with my friends, I started picking up a little bit of, like anything, you start looking for, all right, who's racing cars that are like mine? And once you start looking up for Civics racing, you eventually fall into BTCC and you see Matt Neal and Gordon Shedden and Dan Cummins out there in Civic Type Rs, RSXs, EP3s, just killing it. And you're just like, wow, there's a front wheel drive car that's supposed to be wrong wheel and crappy going wheel to wheel with a 3 Series BMW. Like, what?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of why I went with front wheel drive. It's the car that I had. And then little by little, I ended up liking it more.
So if you had a friend with a podcast who had a rear wheel drive car for, say, an endurance race, would you curl up in a ball saying, no, no, please no? Or is that, it's just not what you have at this point right now?
I mean, look, after instructing, I've learned that the variance between front wheel drive and rear wheel drive in terms of line and position where you're going to be on the track is very minimal. It really comes down to inputs and what you're doing with the pedals and the steering wheel, mid-corner, corner exit, and corner entry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of driving. I like to drive more than I like to wrench on things. And rear-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, like, I just want to drive.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah. So our invitation won't get lost in the mail, shall we say? All right. That's good.
Oh,
good
to know. Hey, amen. As you can see, I am about you give me an opportunity and I will try my best to make it happen. It might be a little ratchet, but you know, I'm down.
That's okay. So, you've been instructing for a bit now.
Mm-hmm.
How has the instructing helped your driving?
That is a great point. You know, I think not only has it it's like having more seat time, but at a slower pace.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm pretty sure you're getting in touch with this because I think you said you were in HPD 4.
Yep, I'm a MSF 2, and I'm getting my final instructor sign off with NASA in 3 weeks.
So you have the HPD 4 pace, right?
Yes.
And
some of it.
When when
there's some beasts out there in HPD.
There is, again, the people who have TTU ready cars going out there and doing that. So trust me, with the 111 horsepower vehicle out at Auto Club Speedway, I understand the closing speed of like people like Kevin Burke hitting like 160 while I'm there in fifth gear, actually probably even fourth gear, just pinging it at 100. So I understand the speed differential, but what I find is that you get to go ahead and see the track at a slower pace with a lot less pressure, and you get to pick up on things a lot very different from when you're going out there. Because when you're going out there, you have, okay, I have my braking point, I have my acceleration point, I have this. Whereas when you go and instruct, you really are depending on a lot of your sensations, a lot of the feeling of how the car is feeling. And when a student does something weird or different, you can go, oh, wow, he did that and we didn't spin out. There's actually a little bit more grip here because I know what tires this guy's running and more or less the weight of his car. So I can definitely push a little bit more here. Mm-hmm. Or it's just an ability to be able to go out on the track and really observe more and take in more data than when you're out there focusing on hitting all of your points. And since HPD One drivers are going a lot slower, it's a lot easier to take in that because you're so used to a higher speed, a higher intensity, that when it brings it down, you're like, okay, I'm comfortable.
I think the biggest realization I got, because when you're progressing, you don't realize that you're really progressing, right?
Yes.
So I get into HPD4 and then they're like, okay, you need to go out and go with the HPD one group and you need to, you know, do lead follow or mm-hmm. follow lead or whatever, do the drills. And all of a sudden I'm driving at like what I think is like 8/10, you know, because, and they're still slow. Like really slow. Like I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I need to back this way on down. And then I'm like, mm-hmm. well, wait a minute. Let me think back. When I was out there, I thought I was at 9/10 or 10/10. So mm-hmm. apparently my tenths have gotten bigger or something, because apparently I've gotten faster. So it was just a surprise to me that it was that marked difference. So it's weird.
Yeah. I mean, I see that with students from like the first session to the last session. Like usually what I try to do with a student when I first get them, is I'll go out with them and I'll ask them to like hit certain points. And most of the time it's just them really learning the track. Mm-hmm. And by the second session, I'll go out there and of course with their permission. And of course I'm only driving it at like 6/10 of what the vehicle,
right.
Well, what I think I can do with the vehicle. And we'll go out there. I'll show them like more or less where they want to be. I'm not redlining or anything like that on their vehicles, but I'm trying to get like a good pace and good flow going. And then they'll pick up on those notes. I refine what they're doing on that same session. And from that student at like 8 or 9 a.m. versus the student at like 4 p.m. on their last session, I mean, you have two completely different drivers.
Yeah, ideally, yeah.
And I mean, if you can then extrapolate that to someone like you who've had more of those opportunities, mm-hmm. I mean, it only makes sense that when you're going to be put back into that starting position, it's going to be completely different in terms of your pace.
Yeah, you just don't notice it about yourself, right?
Yeah, it's... Like I have a hard time with that in terms of accepting that I've increased in potential or capabilities. So I try not to build myself up too much. Sure. So I completely understand where you're coming from with that mindset.
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of northeast. You're kind of about the opposite.
Exactly.
So what would you consider your home tracks? What would be like your stomping grounds?
I would say probably Button Willow is my biggest stomping ground. Outside of that, Big Willow, which is the old fastest road in the West,
right,
track that we have, and that's the one that was in the movie
Ford versus Ferrari, right?
Yeah. So, and they still have the same asphalt from that time, not from the movie, but from when Shelby was out there. And that asphalt is not friendly. It is bumpy.
So you have, I think you're, I'm not trying to insult your car in any way. Let's say you're in the middle of the transition from street to race car. So where exactly would you say you are in that progression?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, because, you know, there is a lot of people who are out there doing time attack events and essentially like street cars with, you know, 400 or 500 horsepower Subarus out there, and they're doing time attack cars. But they're, in my opinion, it's not really a, and maybe this is gatekeeping of me, but I don't consider something a race car. And again, I probably cringe at saying this, but until you're competing wheel to wheel, obviously time attack cars that are like hugely built out like that, they're like time attack cars, because they can go really, really fast, but only for a couple laps. So, I mean, to me, like a real race car is something with all the safety gear, full cage, not a half cage, real bucket seat, harnesses, something that passes tech. And, you know, in terms of power, I don't think that's a significant, I don't think that's important, because you see spec Miatas out there and the lap times that they run at tracks is impressive. And I know very, very powerful cars that struggle to keep the lap times with the spec Miatas.
So you're literally driving from Washington back home, and thank you for pulling over. Well, thank you for pulling over, and thank you for pulling over, because I'd feel really bad doing a podcast while you're driving at 75 miles an hour. But
it's too loud in this car.
So your car right now has the roll cage done?
Yes. So my buddy, who moved away from SoCal up to Washington State, he told me, whenever you get your race car ready, I'll build you your cage. And he is Eli Villa from eVillo Motorsports. And he learned how to build cages with his mentor, Jim Pierce, who did a lot of Hyundai stuff and is a very accomplished driver in his own right. And I think they were doing cages for like this one Porsche only company. And his work is, you know, very, very focused and very big in attention to detail. So he gave me not the homie price, but the Oni-chan price of hooking me up. So I couldn't say no, because even with a flight out there and the gas to get back, it was still like not thousands, but thousands and hundreds of dollars cheaper than I could find nearby.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I got that. And one of the big things that I wanted to make sure with this vehicle was safety. And that's why, as you can see, I drive with the Cobra with the halo seat, because, you know, so many people have sadly, well, not a lot if you really think about it, but enough. People have been severely hurt or passed away with a lateral hits like that. That's why I still have the airbag, and I don't have the seats full seat belts at the shoulder part fully tightened, and I am sitting really squish in here. Again, I don't recommend people to drive with their cage up there. Not a good idea. Have a helmet.
Avoid it if at all possible.
Again, this is a one of those things where your parents are saying, do as I say, not as I do. But this is an incredibly safe vehicle now with this cage and the seat. And dude, there is no room for error in this. Let me show you a little bit of how close this is.
Yep.
It's to the pretty, door frame.
Cage is pretty tight.
Oh, yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
What are your goals for this car? Like, where do you want this car to get to?
In October, I will be doing my first Honda Challenge H4 race. It's okay. been my goal to compete in Honda Challenge H4, much like Dylan that you had on. I'll be out there and...
you should aim much higher than EJ2K Tracker.
Oh, EJ2 Tracker. I love it. He reminds me of why you need to laugh and enjoy yourself when you're out there. Dylan, and just for him, horse.
There you go.
if you know Dylan, you know why.
We do.
But I've met all of the Honda Challenge guys, and it's very humbling to hear pretty much all the people that I've talked with be really involved in my build and constantly looking out for me, double checking the rules to make sure that the cage is going to be in spec and all of these things. And it's so nice when people offer help when it comes unprompted. So yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes you just feel extremely guilty because you're like, I can't return this.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know enough to help you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, especially when it comes to like people like Marcel de Carpel, he's like, in terms of H4, like H4 in SoCal owes a debt of gratitude to Marcel. He keeps like 3 or 4 or 5 of the racers like going because he does all their work for their cars, and sometimes even neglect his car to go out there and race. And I mean, like, you don't find those type of people by paying money for them. You find them by doing acts of good. I'm just so lucky that I am in a position where I can go out there and really get those people's help. So, yeah.
I mean, the way we've had to internalize it ourselves is, you know, that they're just really good people and they want you to be out there enjoying it with them. And that's what they get from it. Cause otherwise you just feel like a taker, you know, and that's.
Yeah. So now this is a question for you. So sure. I've had a lot of people tell me, and I disagree with this notion that, you know, today's generation is not interested in cars and today's generation is XYZ. How are we going to get people to be interested in cars when nobody wants to drive anymore? They just want to Uber left and right. But in my perspective, I see that and I'm like, well, yeah, I don't like commuting. Commuting is horrible. I hate that. I want to go out there and drive at a racetrack. So what do you feel like you as a podcaster can do to kind of like bridge that gap, to find somebody who maybe doesn't care about driving in terms of commuting, but could possibly care about it in terms of like actually going out there and driving and competing?
I mean, that's kind of how or why we did this, was to show that, mm-hmm. you know, we knew nothing, and, you know, mm-hmm. arguably we still know relatively nothing. But you know, anybody can really do this. And if you're even the slightest bit interested, you can get started and give it a run. Mm-hmm. I think the commuting appliance aspect of a car is a little overstated by a lot of people who live in the city, mm-hmm. because, mm-hmm. you know, LA and San Francisco and New York and pick your cities around the country. While there's lots of people there, there's lots of places that don't fit that. And, you know, mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. commute's not that bad. Like my commute where we live is kind of fun. If I take the back way, I have a hell of a good time going in and lots of fun. Yeah. So safely.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And sometimes you need that perspective of seeing things outside of your own setup.
Yeah. Not everywhere is Silicon Valley, you know? And And an automated self-driving car that operates in a predetermined area of Phoenix, Arizona is not the same as what you need in some place in South Dakota in January or February. Mm-hmm. Slightly different operational spaces there. So I think we got a long way to go before we have to worry about it. And, you know, the kids who are into cars are really into cars, and the kids who aren't into cars at all aren't into cars. It's that big chunk in the middle that we can show, and you know, half the reason we have a podcast is to help those people. If they say, hey, I'd like to try that, didn't even know they could, you know, we show them that, hey, this is what you should do, and hopefully that's something that we can help with.
Yeah, I mean, I've run into that a lot, where I've had people coming up and messaging me and saying like, oh man, that's really dope what you do, but what can I do if I don't have the money to go out there and race? Like, I'm not a baller or whatever. And I look at like what you guys have done with the Lucky Dog races and the Lemons. And I'm like, you know, if you really want to get into, racing and have little to no budget, then what you can do is you can volunteer your time. Because I guarantee you, if somebody messaged you and said, hey, for your next race, can I go out there and help you wrench on something?
Yep, that would be at garageheroesintraining@gmail.com, please.
what area again? But yeah. You like me would be like, oh my God, thank you so much. Let me buy you lunch or something to help out. And you know, like, I think if you have literally no money and you want to get into road racing, go at the endurance level, because those people need more help. Yep. And if you can kind of prove that you're worthy of driving whatever requirements that group may or may not have, you can earn your spot in there. And then maybe you won't have to pay, you know, the price of buying a car. Maybe it's just a weekend. You can afford to do that like once every couple months.
Yeah, you can you can volunteer with NASA for several events and earn your, I don't know what they call them, credits, but essentially credits. And you can go out to an HPDE that, you know, you paid for with sweat equity. You know, there's lots of ways to do it. The biggest thing that we saw, and the reason we started, one of the reasons we started a podcast, was everybody kept saying, you can't be a race car driver. You're not, you know, I'm not a 25-year-old Italian male with a multimillionaire for father, right? You know, and I'm not on TV. That's not the only type of racing there is, and they didn't even know it was available. So that was kind of so we tried to do that. So, sir, you have also we share something. You are sharing your vehicle with your significantly better half.
Yes,
and she's starting to get into driving as well.
Yeah, so I was extremely fortunate to meet somebody who would go with me to the desert, to these horribly ugly racetracks. And, you know, she is currently working to jump into time trials. And one of the people that I constantly compete with, Debbie Sharp, her husband, Chuck Sharp, races in Spec 944. And she does time trials in TT6. So I'm essentially, after seeing them work it out and seeing how they run their schedule, I'm just like, I told my fiance, why are you like spending money on getting a second car? Let's get one car that's going to be lightweight, easy on the consumables. And then all the data that I have, you now have. Now you don't have to worry about what gear are we going to be in there, because you will have two sets of people figuring this out. And she'll be running time trial 6 until she's ready to jump into getting her road race license. And then we'll alternate either way. And, you know, that's kind of why I've, like, in terms of safety, I've kind of like gotten big ticket items at, you know, used car prices. as one of my favorite podcasters say, I got Rolex aspirations on the Casio budget. So that's why I got this Cobra seat with the halo that I was able to pick up from Facebook Marketplace for $700 instead of full retail price. So
less than half.
So, and again, we go with the cage that's less than half of what other people would be charging. And, you know, the harnesses that I'm running are also kind of race tech, but I paid MSRP for that one. But yeah, like Safety is really important to me. I try not to skimp on that. Obviously, there's other manufacturers that make things that are a lot more cost effective, and you could buy them new. But right. if I can, I'll try to splurge on safety.
Well, you can get a deal, but don't cut a corner, right?
Yeah. And I'm also going to be getting the fire suppression system in the vehicle because, as you've seen, mm-hmm. there's been several cars that have caught fire. And it's really scary to see that because, you know, you can't always control where the fire happens. And
no.
you could be going down a front straight at like 100 miles an hour and then boom. It's like, what do you do?
Yep. I might know a guy who's got an extra fire bottle or two, so. Just FYI.
All right, like it.
There you go. Okay, so your podcast,
mm-hmm.
the FF Racing Podcast. Why did you start your podcast?
So, you know, I have had conversations with several people, and I remember I had a conversation with Joe Alanis, who's kind of renowned for building engines for Honda Challenge drivers and also for building S2000 engines. And he kind of goes way back, and most of the fast drivers that I got a chance to talk to and meet, they had their engines built by Alanis. And I needed a head work done on my 93 Civic, but again, I was broke, so I ended up going with Joe because he just gave me an amazing price for the work that he was doing. And when I sat there and I talked to him, he was just so giving with his time, and we had a good conversation about like his old job and how he came up to have like a gigantic shop, and because of the recession in 2008, got rid of it. And I was just like, wow, this is such a great story. Like, and if nobody shares it, it goes away.
Right.
And there's like so many people in SoCal who exist only on, you know, like old forum threads. And if those go away, their entire story goes away. And I think with having them speak and talk about their own experiences, you get to get a better understanding of who that person is and sharing that story. So I really wanted to share SoCal racer stories that I've had a good opportunity to talk to, and I felt that I could bug some people and they might come on the podcast. And I've been shocked at the level of people that have said yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So if somebody hasn't listened to your podcast before, what episode would you say they should try to first time listeners? Hey, listen to this one. This one's kind of what I do. And we did a good job on this one and the guest or the topic.
Well, in terms of number one plays, I would say it's my episode with Carlos Valenzuela, who is currently the points leader in Honda Challenge H4. If you want to have like some more celebrity type people, you have Ryan Eversley, mm-hmm. Adam Jabe, Tom O'Gorman.
Who? Adam?
Adam Jabe.
Who?
So, I mean, I've been very lucky to get a lot of really good guests. But, you know, if you're looking for guests, those are good ones. But overall, if you want to follow a build of somebody who was kind of figuring out what to do, just listen to the start and you can hear all the little mistakes that I did and hopefully learn from them. And so you don't have to do that. Now, I actually wanted to ask you, sure. you have another co-host who's looking for a car.
Yes, Jennifer, Vicky's sister.
Yes. So you guys were talking about having her get a car that's going to be able to be reliable and give her a lot of seat time, right?
Mm-hmm. HPDE and daily-ish. Mm-hmm.
So I've been racking my brain on trying to figure out, and in terms of price points for that one. And of course, I'm going to recommend a front wheel drive car.
Shocking. That's shocking. Okay. She wants to learn how to, I mean, one of the things she's been looking at Hondas because she wants to learn how to
wrench
a bit. So yeah, there's always that. And so, we have one. So.
So I love the Golden Era Honda. So your 88 to 2001, because they had the double wishbone arms and you can find a lot of parts, but things like transmission components are starting to become more and more rare, and those are getting more and more difficult. And I think that's kind of, if I look at the budgets of what you would be spending in terms of just building the car up, you end up putting more money into fixing it than you do into driving it, which, I mean, me, because I'm a fanboy, I'm going to go with the fixing it one. But I actually was thinking there's two chassis that I know are very stout and are pretty much, you know, kind of like little design issues that you can fix and are great for the price that they are. One is the 2006 to 2011 Honda Civic Si. They're going for pretty cheap and you have great structural rigidity. I've seen somebody flip one out on track and the roof did not cave in. So that, and the A-pillars are gigantic. Like, they have a massive blind spot for me in my Ace Gen. The only real weak point is you need to upgrade the braking system. It's just a little too small. So you can go to Rock Auto and buy TSX calipers, and those bolt right on, and you don't have any issues. But working on that one's kind of a pain because it's kind of like the Vans where the engine's so far into the firewall, it's kind of hard to work on.
Right, right.
And the other one is the first generation Honda Fit. And beyond the like meme of it having 200% structural rigidity it being increased, it's low on consumables. You're running 15-inch tires.
Yep.
And you fold can Sunday down the cup seat. It
with GLTC.
Oh, I mean, there you go. And you know, you can fold down the back seat and you have so much room for activities.
Right.
Like you could put in spare tires, camping backpack, and whatever, and you could still get 30 miles to the gallon. Like it's no deal. And it's a modern car. So there's still parts you can get from Honda, like new, if you need them.
Right.
And you know, I think it's a good all around chassis, and for around like I've seen the eighth generation Civics going SIs going from as low as 4,000 to around 7,000, 8,000, and the Fits are going for around the same price. So, I think either one of those vehicles are awesome, and they would be great learning tools for her. I would say probably lean more with the Fit. And just put some wheels, tires, brake pads, and maybe some coilovers, and you're set to go forever.
Have at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you manage to see one around your area, because it would be a whole lot better than our area, rust-wise, let us know.
I'm going to send you some Facebook Marketplace ones for sure.
All right, very well. We'll do that. And just in case, I don't know, since we're talking about the 8th Gen Civics, do you know any podcasts that might have like the top five mods that somebody might want to listen to on that?
Thank you. That is my opinion on that chassis. It's one of the ones where, at least with my cars, I try and drive them until I reach the limit of a part. And then replace it. So yeah, I did a little cheat sheet on top five build things you need to do for an 8th Gen Civic, and one of my favorite mods, which is a $30 mod, is for the front compliant bushings that you can get from Moog, and they sell a spherical kit that just bolts in there, and I've been driving mine daily and tracking it for over 2 years. And no issues with that one. It's $30. Press them in. You're done.
And there's four more that somebody could listen to. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just one.
No, just one. There's four more at least. I think you actually gave a few extras, but that's just me. Yeah. So one of the things that we do like about your podcast is that you're willing to show some of the errors that you've encountered, like your coilover story perhaps might have led to an entertaining episode or segment of an episode. Care to expand upon your coilover history?
So which one in particular? Because now I'm starting to feel like I don't know my podcast.
Somebody listens. I'm just saying. Somebody listens.
Damn, I'm getting stumped. Coilover issues.
All right, let's do something easier. You have any white whales for your podcast that you still have out there that you're like, oh man, my podcast is top if I had.
You know, I think it would be a disservice to the people who have already come on. I mean, having people like Tomo, Adam, Ryan Eversley, to have them on there.
Well, they're already on your Mount Rushmore. Yeah. Who's missing?
I mean, who's missing? I don't know, man.
Who do you put out there?
Who can I mean? Look, I love this person's work. Ross Bentley, I have so much respect for the man. And every time he comes to Button Willow, I'm always posting cows, because if you ever come out to Button Willow, that's what you smell. Yeah. So I would love to have him on. Because, see, and this is the interesting thing. When we talk about guests, I want to have somebody who isn't the person that just buys his way in. Sure. And obviously, like, if I had the money, I would do the same thing. But the thing that I really respected about Ross Bentley is that he had to do more with less.
Absolutely.
And whenever I see somebody doing more with less, those are people who I really find interesting. And so far, I haven't found somebody who does more with less, especially at the level that he did, to do what he's done. I mean, that's him, Randy Popes. I mean, Randy Popes, come on. I watched all of the Driving Line series. I watched all of his Tesla.
Head to head.
Yeah, I mean, dude, everything that he puts out, I watch.
Yep.
As well, I guess should. Those are the only ones that I can think of. I mean, I've just been so lucky. And I if you have other podcasts that are kind of in the road race sphere, I would love to talk to them and kind of like share my message and their message and kind of collaborate, because I want more people to be involved in the sport and know that they have a home there if they want it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will hope that all 10 of our listeners will tune in and check yours out.
Thank you. And the seven that listen to me to mine will definitely take a look at this one.
All right, very well. We could double our listenership. Woohoo!
Oh man, doubling. Doubles.
You know what's better about doubling your listenership? You get twice the salary you get now. So two times zero is still zero.
I was thinking we were gonna get twice the work.
We do that too. Yeah. There's that. Well, thank you, sir. This is the first of hopefully many times you come on the podcast. We'd love to talk to you again.
Anytime.
The ladies were unavailable this week. They had a prior engagement, which actually turned into quite a bit of a fiasco, which you can tune into next week.
I'll do my best.
I'll be working
on this car, getting it prepped. So I'll have Garage Heroes in training in my garage.
Very well. That sounds great. People want to follow you. Podcast, Instagram, Facebook, what's your flavors?
So I do Instagram, and the podcast is Race FF Pod. And it's the same thing for Instagram, Race FF Pod. But yeah, I drop new episodes every Monday. I'm trying to do one for this one. As you can see, I'm kind of haphazardly getting it together. So it might be a short one.
That's okay. Short ones get out there too. Well, yeah. Thank you, sir. I do appreciate the pullover on your long distance commute. Good luck with the build. Keep us thank up you. To date. We do love seeing this and rooting for you for your Honda Challenge debut.
Thank you, sir.
No worries. You have a great day, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.